Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm surviving. I'm still here. They're still allowing me to podcast. Yeah.
It's the,
so far.
The end of the world as we know it.
I hope our signal reaches worldwide simultaneously.
It may not. The rest of the world may cut us off.
I don't really know what's going to happen, but we're here.
We're here. We're doing what we got to do.
We're still cranking through 115th podcast, you know. We're allowed to do that.
This machine kills fascists, so they will not slow us down. Yeah,
that's right. We'll just keep on rolling. Rolling the tank. Mm-hmm. I got a bunch of stuff to talk about with you. We should probably start with some of the things that you've posted in the last week since we last spoke. Some of this we touched on last week, because this tends to happen where we say, here's what's coming up, and then it comes and we say, look at that, there it is.
Yeah.
So your review of Teachers season 2 went up. You know, this is that thing we keep talking about, the kind of hidden gem from last January that's back. And season 2, still good?
Yeah, it really is good. I watched the first 4 episodes and, you know, they just fly by. And I think they're more confident. They're just as funny as ever. I kind of tried to reintroduce people to the characters if they've seen them or if they hadn't seen them in my review. And I think that you can just jump right into the second season. You don't have to watch the first one. But I think they're more confident from having gone through that first season. It's very funny. They do a couple of really creative things. Like, one of the teachers that I like is, she was a facilitator. She's really earthy, crunchy, and she's promoted, of course, to the art teacher. But they only give her one paintbrush and they give her a shopping cart is her classroom. So she drives her shopping, and then slowly she sells things to acquire more material. Hmm. And she drives her shopping cart from class to class. It's a nice riff on funding in public schools. And in the same season, one of the teachers is given a trailer, you know, and a portable trailer. And it's a great little riff where they turned it into very subtly. She moves from the teacher, because there's no air conditioning there. She moves from like the normal look of the teacher to kind of a trailer trash mom. Hmm. And they have fun with it. And I was happy to have them back.
That's great. Yeah. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Also, we talked about last week about Victoria with Jenna Coleman, but it started airing and your article went up. So just a reminder of Jenna Coleman.
It's really, Victoria. Yeah, Jenna Coleman's great in that. It's really fun. Rufus Sewell is magnificent, especially in the first 3 episodes. It's very good, especially for people who, well, A, that's a queen that you want to make a series about, because it's a lot of interesting stuff going on in her reign. And also there was a lot of, it stayed very closely to the truth, which is important in these historical dramas. But more than anything, Jenna Coleman is just, she's just magnetic, and she does a lot of good work with the role, and the writing is very solid. And that's a world that I think can substitute nicely for Downton Abbey. I'm not saying it's going to be Downton Abbey, but maybe it'll be better eventually. But you may not be able to duplicate the popularity of that show, but I think they found something at least that works perfectly on that Sunday. And people are definitely getting their fixes, so catch up on that.
Yeah, nice. Okay, and you also wrote a piece this past week about The Young Pope. The Young Pope, a meme-erific series before its debut. And I thought your piece was really interesting because you start out by saying, like, maybe the memes got ahead of the show here.
Yeah, I think they definitely hijacked the show. Because and I think that some of the more thoughtful reviews came in, or some people from Europe started chiming in that they had seen the whole thing, then it kind of persuaded people that it wasn't just this, like, he's a pope and he's young, which is really not the whole point of the idea. And the show itself is very, very complicated to write about and very complicated to put on. It's unbelievably beautiful to watch. And it's just, Paolo Sorrentino has done an amazing job of not only creating it, writing it, and directing it, but the directing and the cinematography and the lighting. Oh my God, the lighting is amazing. I watched the first 5 of 10, and so I've watched half the season, and it just, there's more to this show, certainly, than the memes, and there's more to the show than you think as you move along. I think it's got some tonal shifts that are not super jarring, but they're just interesting. Like, just when you think the show is kind of interesting, you don't know where it's going to go, it's humorous, then it becomes serious. I think it has more to say. It's kind of a meditation on, like, loneliness and belief and spirituality, less than it is religion, although that's in there, clearly is in there. Oddly paced, which I think is because it's Italian and it comes from somebody from Italy and their perspective of it. And interesting concept. And Jude Law is amazing. I don't know what I'm going to think after I finish all 10 episodes, but I tell you what, I'm going to keep watching for sure.
So basically, come for the memes and the weirdness, but stay for the depth that seems to happen as the show goes along.
Yeah, I think that's maybe kind of one of the cool side effects, is that it becomes a lot more, it's a lot deeper than you think it is, rather than, so go beneath the memes and you'll find a whole lot more there.
Ooh, that's we could all stand to go beneath the memes.
Go beneath the memes.
A little bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got a piece, before we got started, you mentioned that you've got a piece coming up that we can give a preview, like this is an exclusive preview of a piece to be posted to the Hollywood Reporter. And it's about a subject that will not be a surprise to the listeners of this podcast. It might be a surprise to the readers of the Hollywood Reporter, but not to the listeners of this podcast, because it is an appreciation for Acorn TV.
Yeah, and I've been, you know, you and I have, we, it's so funny, as I wrote this, the podcast has been so far ahead of the column that's about to come out. It was weird. It was
a lot of times podcasts are like the rough draft where you're like getting your thoughts together, and then you're like, I mean, this happens to me all the time with tech stuff, where it's like, I'll talk about it on a podcast, I'll be like, you know, there's a story in there.
Yeah, no
eventually
doubt.
You get there. Yeah, and this is the streaming service with mostly British TV programs.
Yeah, and British and beyond now. And they've gone into Australia and New Zealand and kind of all international. But the bulk of their stuff is definitely British. And yeah, I was the podcast is way ahead of this one. So it was weird. I was writing and I had to kind of like check the storyline. I was a little out ahead of myself. But it's a column, a Critics Notebook column I wanted to write for a really long time, because, obviously I love Acorn. And, you know, that's how I just found The Detectorist by accident on there. And so I told that story of sort of just like flipping around and finding it when people, it had been in the back of my mind. People would say, oh, this is really good. Great. I give credit to the publicist, Chad Campbell, who had politely for a very long time, more than a year, telling me to like, oh, please watch our shows. Like almost two years, I might think. And I started watching them very, very slowly and in and out, and then they built, and then I started to watch it like once a week or so. I've tried to like, go on, and I tout the service for all, it's new and it's old stuff that's there, but also just for me, I like to go into Acorn, and this is how I would promote the channel to everybody else, is that I go in there and I don't know what the shows are about. I'm just like, oh, that looks good. Let's try that. And I see if it can get me in the first 15 minutes or so. And I tell you, the list of shows that have got me that now I need to catch up on are just, it's kind of staggering. Huh. So anxiety producing for me because I have so much stuff. But there's some really interesting international stuff I've never heard of. And that part of it, I was just doing this last couple of nights, but that part of it reminded when you and I had this talk about you going in and finding stuff on Netflix, it was really ringing true to what I was doing after we talked with Acorn, and thinking, dang, I got to come back to that one. And, you know, there's a Romanian series there. There's two from Finland. There's one from France. And then it's kind of on the same idea of just stumbling on things. And I did give some props to Netflix for that. Although your idea that it's almost like Netflix is saying, oh, we have so many shows that these will be like these great like cookies you stumble on, you know, later on and become cult shows. Whereas on Acorn, I just think, you know, their machinery for promoting it is so much infinitesimally small compared to Netflix. So that you fall onto shows, you know, that you like, you may have like, I'd never heard of Jack Irish, and started the like, oh, okay, that's really interesting. And you know, I think I mentioned that I was watching a Very British Problems Christmas special. So, you know, the British love Christmas specials, so I have that. But last night I was watching some stuff before I wrote this, and I fell into this show, because that's what I do. I just go around like, oh, what is that? Oh, let's try that. And then I realize sometimes when I click on it, and then like, oh, this is a show was made in the 80s. Hmm. And then I'm like, it makes me laugh. Well, one of them I've never heard of. It's about to leave the system. If you have Acorn, you should maybe get on it. But it's called The Ruth Rendell Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And the first season stars a young Colin Firth. And it's really kind of slow and interesting. It's got that little slightly dated look to it, because you know how the television looks back in those days. But anyway, last night I stumbled upon, of all things, a non-scripted series from New Zealand where I was just like, what, you know, what is this? And it's a nonfiction thing about a guy who is he's an art curator in New Zealand, and he does this show that kind of shows you how to look at a painting or how to look at these different things. And it's very quirky because it's very New Zealand. You know, they're like, here we are at the Christchurch, you know, museum, which is a lovely museum. And he just talks about art a lot. And I was fascinated by it. And it's, I don't know how dated it was, but I was like hooked. And it was a nonfiction New Zealand show. So there you go.
And they've got some interesting stuff, like they've got All the Prime Suspect on there.
Mm-hmm.
They got Peep Show with Mitchell and Webb on there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's stuff that you may recognize. But yeah, that's the beauty of flipping through one of these services and being like, I have no idea what these things are. I wonder what this is going to be.
Yeah. And next week, maybe in time for next week's podcast, some of their modern shows, one of their modern ones that just aired in the UK and has rave reviews is Agatha Christie's The Witness for the Prosecution. Apparently it was a very big deal over there, and that's going to start on January 30th, so 10 days from today. So I'll do a preview of that and start watching some of those shows. But yeah, they've got good things. A lot of classics, a lot of stuff where you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, Foyle's War. I remember that, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of ones that you're familiar with. There were two newish comedies that I've never heard of. One's called Cradle to Grave, and the other one's called Raised by Wolves. And those ones I totally want to look into.
It looks like they're adding Black Books, which I know people love and has been very hard to see in the U.S. So right. Many of these are the stories, right? As you hear about something that was did a PBS run or maybe was on cable or something, and then it just vanished because, you know, it's made for a different market and there wasn't that much demand, and you never get a chance to see it, and then it pops back up somewhere else. So that I love this idea. I mean, we've talked before about the idea that Netflix doesn't want old stuff, and so that eventually somebody's going to need to make a streaming service for old TV. but this is like that. This is that niche streaming service. And you know, TCM has a streaming service now for old movies. But this is that. This is if you ever wished that you could get the BBC or shows from Australia and New Zealand and places like that. Well, this is sort of that. Right. With Acorn, yeah, other than the stuff that maybe bubbles up to PBS.
Yeah. I mean, and when you have they have a lot of classics, you know, I mean, they've got Cold Feet on there and Kath and Kim, stuff I've written about decades ago. It seems like Prime Suspect, one of the greatest series ever made. So they have a lot of that stuff. There, people who are Anglophiles will have seen these shows for a while. But again, I never heard in my entire life of the Ruth Rendell Mysteries, and I was just in the mood to sort of watch it. I was trying to, and then it said it's going to leave on February 1st. And I thought, oh, hell, I got to really get on this if I'm going to find out about the young Colin Firth and this murder mystery. But who knows? Yeah, I'm sure we'll probably get some letters next week where people are like, oh, my God, I either loved those shows or don't bother, Tim. you listed off two dead ends there or three dead ends. Who knows? But I was hooked on what I was seeing, and a little appreciation for them goes up soon.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've got some reports for you
about
from my TV viewing. I just want to share.
Yes.
I finished Travelers, which I mentioned last week, and I've heard from a few people who have started or who also watched it and enjoyed it. And I would say that I think it ends really well. I thought it was really great. Didn't realize it was a 12 episode season and not a 13 episode season. So episode 12 ends in a colossal cliffhanger, and no, there's no 13th episode. So hoping that it comes back. I don't think it's been officially renewed for a second season, but it sounds like, hopefully Netflix is watching the plays and they've got their co-producer in Canada. And although Eric McCormick, they're going to have to make sure to get him when he's not shooting the revival of Will and Grace, which is apparently a real thing on NBC.
That is... I'm shocked by that, but there, you know,
and there's
there.
The new 24 is also coming, right? I mean, the revival, like, you, I think it follows though, Tim, right? It is, these are franchises that are recognizable, right? So revivals is part of the network remit at this point, I guess.
Yes. Oh, by the way, breaking news. I just noticed that they posted my Critics Notebook on Acorn. But because it's so Trump and Sundance on the site, you're probably never going to find it. So I will tweet that out to people.
Yeah, and we will put it in the show notes, which you can get at theincomparable.com/TVTM/115 for this episode. And yes, it's in there. Or in your podcast
your
app.
Show that you were just talking about, Travelers, they followed us. They followed me on Twitter.
So oh, look
they
at
must
that.
Have followed you probably too. Since
yeah,
you
there were a few tweets
about
from people who said that they heard it on the show too, and then went and checked it out. Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun, and it ended well. It ended with one of those crazy cliffhangers where like everybody's storyline is completely up in the air, and you have no idea what's going to happen next. And it was a pretty wild ride, so I really enjoyed it. So I hope they bring that back, and that Eric McCormick is gainfully employed outside of NBC.
Yeah, and I don't know if we need a Will and Grace revival, but whatever.
I don't know. Well, we don't need a Full House reboot either, and that's what we got. So
we got it.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do? I also wanted to report that I watched Sherlock.
Oh, yes. But I would just say, don't spoil it for me. I haven't watched it.
Okay. Can I give you my verdict on it?
Yes, I want to give you your verdict, because I know people are not happy. Or some people are not happy.
I didn't like the Christmas special they did last year, and because I felt it was incredibly self-referential, and it's basically like the show stopped being about a brilliant guy who solves mysteries, and it became a show about the fame of Sherlock and John and what they were going to do next. And this season continued that trend, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. So,
really?
Yeah,
interesting. I think self-aware, or
yeah, and way too much, way too meta, way too about itself, way too far away from what I sort of view as the premise of it. I think a lot of winking at the fandom, and I think a lot of I don't know, more magic tricks in the script, and a lot of which didn't make any sense to me. Like, and actually some unpleasant stuff in the third episode too. So yeah, I didn't like it on so many different levels. But so that's my, for what it's worth, people who love Sherlock, that's great. It still looks great. The actors are fantastic, and I think I felt like I was watching sort of Steve Moffat and Mark Gatiss at their worst. But
Oh well. Wow, that is harsh.
Yeah,
friend.
Yeah, there was. Well, I just read a review of it somewhere, and I can't remember where it was, where they said that it's that Sherlock is a show about two megalomaniacs, Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss.
Oh, that's funny.
Brutal,
wow.
But not entirely incorrect, I think. So that's fine. People who like it, that's great. But I was. It's unclear if it's coming back. Although I think they're playing coy, and I think that as long as Benedict Cumberbatch is saying publicly that he's happy to go on doing it and he doesn't want it to end, that it probably will not end, but it may be, 2 years, 3 years. It's very hard to get those actors who are so scheduled with movies and things to come back and do a collection of TV movies for the BBC. So who knows how long it'll be. But when they come back, I hope they kind of go back to basics a little bit, because I think they just got too far up their own premise. Yeah. That's all. That's my Sherlock report.
Yeah.
Maybe you will feel differently when you watch it. But no spoilers.
Well, no, you
just
were,
didn't like it.
I tell you, I will say this, having not seen that was really, that's really not, you really pushed that down the ladder of thing I'm about to get to, by the way.
I
was just gonna
you're
say.
Welcome.
Wow. That's, given my recent weeks of, you know, popping in and out of Acorn and finding all these other things I want to watch, and then hearing that, and then knowing all these other shows I'm watching, I guess I might get to that at who knows when. But they shot themselves in the foot a little bit. I don't know if you remember this or if I even said it last time. They had said that, and this was driven, I think, probably from the producers, but they had said that they didn't want to send review copies out to critics. And I thought, what? It's not that big of a show, you guys. You need as much help as you can get. It's critically acclaimed, but it's not enormous. And so they said, we're going to give it to a few critics. Would you like the first thing? I was like, yeah, absolutely. So they said, okay. And then I waited. And it was getting late. And my boss was like, or my editor was like, hey, were you going to turn that in this week? I'm going to check the link. I'll ask her again. I checked back with the woman. She said, oh, yeah, no. Somebody from THR in London went to a press conference where there was no screening, by the way. So it wasn't like you could write about it. Went to the press conference and they thought that you guys were taken care of. So they crossed you off the list.
All right.
I was like, oh, so we don't get to see it. Okay, great. Not watching it. So that was it.
Mm. Well, I'm not
sure they did themselves any favors.
I mean, it goes back to what you were saying about Acorn too. There's an imbalance of like, you know, they're building that show primarily for the British TV audience and promoting it there. And I think it might be easy to lose track of it. And I actually kind of feel for the PBS and the Masterpiece people who have to promote it because it's always going to be kind of a secondary thing for them, for the creators and everything. Cause it's not their focus. Just like, you know, that's the reason we don't hear about things that are on Acorn, right? Because they don't care about the US market really, or at least it's not their number one thing. And the BBC is even more political about how it's like, you're not even supposed to make shows on the BBC for anybody else. Like the only audience that you should ever think about is the audience paying the license fee in the UK, and then, which I think is bogus and they don't actually do that, but that's how they're supposed to act. So I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
there it is. So, so coming up this week, there's some stuff coming up. I guess you're working on a Legion review, but that's not for a couple of weeks. But you got the mutant. Somebody made you watch. Is making you watch an X-Men show. What the heck?
Well, it's different. I mean, I'm not totally adverse to that, even though I don't have like all the whole history. Because I believe like if you want to attract everybody, you can't just have the people who watch or you know, part of the Marvel universe
totally,
or whatever.
Totally true. You got, you know. But it is still nerd TV of a sort, and you are.
It is of a sort, but it's, you know, it's like, you know, when the guy who makes the Fargo is doing this, and you know, and I wasn't at TCI, obviously.
It's FX, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's FX, and you know, to have him basically say, "Look, all the superhero shows and movies that are out there, they've got all the action and the swivel kicks and all that stuff down. We're going to work on the mental part." Mm. So to me, that's like him saying, yeah, it's got a superhero element to it, but this is really a drama and it's really going to be cerebral. It's going to be less of like, you know, magic acts of heroism via a superhero. So I was like, okay, count me in. I'll watch it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to your review of that, but that doesn't, that premieres in early February. So we'll talk about more about it then. I'll tell you about who Legion is, in the comics. I'll give you a little backstory there.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I read about it. I thought, okay, now that's kind of interesting.
He's not a well-known, I mean, this is one of those cases where Marvel is now doing an incredibly good job of giving people access to corners. And this is part of the X-Men catalog, right? So they already, Fox already has access to it, but it's weird stuff in the canon that's just off in the corner that's worth doing. It's just like how Freeform is doing the Cloak and Dagger series, which again is a superhero set of superhero characters, but totally not on the radar of most people, right? It's not Spider-Man, it's not Wolverine, and Legion is like that too, where, you know, a comic book fan, an X-Men fan would know the character from the comics, but I think it's kind of brilliant, right? Because the audience expectations are different. And you can kind of do, you can ignore the canon if you want to, and it's fine, because what you're really taking is this kind of clever character and premise that was, you know, thrown out in a comic 30 years ago and doing what you want with it. And I sometimes think those shows have a better chance of being a good show because they're not like a property. They're just a kind of it's like taking a book or something and adapting it. You're just taking the premise and then you can run with it.
Yeah, it's not weighted down with all these expectations.
Right, right. I mean, if it was like, we're going to do a show about, you know, the X-Men. Yeah, exactly. People were like, oh boy, well, how are you going to live up to the movies? And what's this going to be about? You know, and I read that as a kid and all of that. And Legion, it's like, who knows? Nobody on the street is going to know the story of Legion, right? That you got to be an X-Men nerd to understand who Legion is. So I think that's good. I think that's an asset is what I'm saying. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you think.
I think so too. And I think it's smart of them to just dole it out, like you said, in free form. And here's FX, two diametrically opposed channels on the dial. And just like, I think it's really smart of them to say, here, creative people, do what you wish for this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Take it where you want.
It's the same approach with Riverdale. Jason.
Riverdale. Archie. Well, I got my Archie cred a few weeks ago and telling the story of how they've totally changed the Archie system and how they did a more CW style plotline in the comics, and they also did the zombie afterlife with Archie comic and all those things.
Which,
and
I thought you were trying to pull my leg on that one.
No, it's totally real. Afterlife
it's
with
totally
Archie.
Real.
Totally real. But so Dan watched Riverdale, and I think we could report that his response was meh.
You know,
he didn't. It sounds like, I mean, it was one of the most striking right down the middle reviews I've read in a while, where he's like, well, this, I kind of didn't want to see it, but then I thought it was kind of interesting, but then it kind of lost me. And, you know, they made this decision, which was interesting, but this other decision's kind of not. And, you know, the most I think he could muster up was being offended that it's Josie and the Pussycats who perform Sugar Sugar. That really bothered him.
Yeah, he did seem a little outraged by that. Otherwise, right on the fence.
Yeah, it sounds like it's actually kind of a more generic feeling CW show, like before the CW kind of got it together, that it's sort of teen angst and, you know, it's there it is for those who want to partake of Archie and Jughead, Betty and Veronica.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch it, but somebody might.
So you know what I'm going to watch, and I know what you're going to watch. I'm definitely watching Magicians Season 2, which premieres next week on Sci-Fi, and I know you'll be watching The Path Season 2.
Yes. Both of us in shows we both liked and talked about quite a bit last year. That's not, well, I guess that's technically true.
Yeah, it was last year now. Yeah. But so the two season twos of shows that the season one was solid by. I mean, I always love that because sometimes they fumble it in season two, and other times I feel like shows just like totally get it together in season two because they finally have, you know, they've done this before and they know where they're going. And I have no idea whether that would be the case for either of these shows, but I'm looking forward to seeing both.
Yeah, and I think they were both kind of surprises. Magicians, maybe even more so, because people were not really thinking much for that sci-fi show, and it did really well for them. And The Path, I think, was a real step in the right direction of being a little bit more premium content for Hulu. And again, Hulu had a huge year last year as far as like distinguishing itself.
For sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Magicians season. Yeah. I thought that season got better as it went along, and it tried very hard to be something very different from your kind of initial expectation of it being kind of like, what if it was, you know, Harry Potter in college
right.
So that there's more sex and drugs, but it's more than that. And when, you know, when the show goes down the rabbit hole, and like seriously, it kind of goes literally down the rabbit hole, it got pretty good. So looking forward to those.
Yeah. And that's Wednesday, the day before we ignore Riverdale. Basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then The Expanse is coming back, but we'll talk about that next week because it'll be
got it
next week. Want to do some letters, or do you have any other material you'd like to bring up before we get to the letters?
Here's what I would say. I would just say one thing about streaming services and them getting tons of new stuff. We know the narrative of, joked about it last week, the narrative of Netflix having so many shows they don't really know what they have. You know, like, really, is that one of ours? And I think it continues because I'm not sure you knew this was happening, but on Friday, January 27th, there's a new Amazon drama called Z: The Beginning of Everything. And if you think that's a zombie movie and it's a zombie series, you're wrong. It's about Zelda Fitzgerald.
Oh, I did hear about that.
Christina Ricci.
Yeah, it did sound sort of familiar, but she's not a zombie.
She is not to my knowledge, but
who knows?
You actually hearing about it is probably stunning, because I think that Z, The Beginning of Everything, is like Z's, like it snored right under the everybody's attention.
Well, and that's the end of everything, is the snoring.
Is the end of everything, yeah. And so that starts on Friday, and I think we're hitting that, I mean, just to be a little bit about the industry, we're hitting that point where people are, it's almost like they're not even promoting their own material. And I already wrote that Amazon column for stuff that they really like. But right. It's like for the general population, how are you going to know and anticipate a new series when all of us, like, I barely heard of Z, The Beginning of Everything. I remember thinking that it was about zombies. And then I'm like, oh, it's Zelda Fitzgerald. Okay, no, pass. I don't know. I have no idea how that show is. Maybe it's great and we'll find out. But that is another poster child of too much TV.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so much TV. In fact, we have a letter about that too.
Oh, let's get to it.
All right. So let's do the letters here. We'll start with that one. I'll move it up. That's Bradley from the +44. This is a good one.
Oh, yes. The Brits.
It says, with peak TV not yet at its absolute peak and a predicted 500 scripted shows airing in 2017, do you think it would be possible for any one individual to watch at least a single episode from every scripted show that airs during the course of the year? With your answer in mind, if I were to then say to you both that I was attempting to do this, how long would it take you to recommend me to a mental asylum? Keep up the good work, Bradley from the +44. 500 scripted shows, so... Uh-huh. You got to average almost two a day of different shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not, and here's the thing. You don't really have that laid out in front of you. So plotting it and planning it is really the hard part.
Right. Because you got to get those, you got to DVR those shows when they're on. And it being in the +44, you know, that's going to be an extra challenge. You're going to need to find what is airing on what networks or what's on streaming, and things that air on broadcast. You got to record them because you might not be able to catch them later. Lots of issues. Lots
it would
of
make
rules.
A good book. And you know, a lot of books are based around, I did X for 1 year and this is my story. That's not a bad one, because you would have to try to find all of that stuff. I mean, it also sounds like an Onion story. Local Man does Insane Project.
Yeah. But I think it sounds great. It is sort of Dean level, you know, church and bar in every state kind of level of challenge. But what I would say, if you do it, Bradley, before we recommend you to the asylum, I would say you got to, like Tim said, you got to plan your attack. You might want to set some rules, because there may be shows that don't air in your region that you can just not put on the list. And I would say take notes. Like, if you're going to do this, do a diary or a blog or something about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Don't throw it away with just your time. Put extra work in so that you've got a record of what you saw.
Mm-hmm. Make a project.
Also, that'll be useful, because you'll be able to take notes about which ones you liked. And that might be a good thing to do, too, is to have the, which ones did I like and which ones did I hate?
And then 3 years later, when he comes back on TVTM and says, I finished, then you can say, well, you went over the time, disqualified. But you know what? If more of these people, if our listeners are doing these crazy stunts, we're going to lose listeners. So,
yeah, that's true. You know. Another thing, Bradley, don't give up any podcast listening to do this project.
Yeah, don't do that.
We implore you.
Because that also, let's be honest, that kind of tweaks. Yeah, if you don't do your normal routine... Yeah, you can do a lot of extra things. You get all of a sudden, now you have a bunch of extra time, so you can watch 500 shows. But you got to go to the grocery store. You got to go to the gym. You got to go to the new restaurant. You got to go see live music. You got to be with your family. Maybe not necessarily in that order, obviously. Maybe they would come first. I don't know. But, you know, you have a lot of things to do in life. Then you can add 500 shows. And then let's see if you can do it. Don't give up the podcast.
Amen.
Buddy.
Mm-hmm. This is David from the 585.
Ooh.
Who writes in. Hey, Tim and Jason. As 2017 starts, the only reboot I am generally interested in is Twin Peaks on Showtime. I'm a big admirer of David Lynch avant-garde weirdness, which leads me to my question. Good or bad, what's the absolute weirdest TV show you've ever seen?
Ooh, I should know this question.
Twin Peaks is definitely in the running, right? Twin Peaks is a seriously weird show. God, there are others.
Black Mirror would qualify for me.
That is a weird show. Get a Life, starring Chris Elliott. That was a weird show. He dies at the end of every episode. Or some episodes.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't matter because he's alive the next week. That one always got to me. That was a super weird show. There are a lot of weird sitcoms on Fox in that period. Action with Jay Moore was super weird too.
Action, yeah, that is kind of a different kind of weird though, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's like a weird storytelling rather than like visually weird.
How about Prophet with Adrian Pastar?
Yeah, that was one of the weirdest. There's
right,
no
where he
question.
Sleeps in the box.
Mm-hmm. that was one of the shows that molded me as a critic because I was like, oh, what, you can do this? And I was like, how was dark weird. Is this? So it turned out I was witnessing one of the darkest shows I would ever see in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
But yeah. I, you know, there's also weird in the sense, there's surreal stuff when you have dream sequences in them. Twin Peaks is weird because it's just weird. There's some weird sci-fi stuff. There's obviously that. But just getting back to the actual Twin Peaks, I would say my big worry is that it doesn't, the weight of so much expectation is on Twin Peaks. I don't think it can live up to it. I would be stunned if people were not like, not universally, but at least 50% split of like, nah, waste of time, or I don't know why they did it. And maybe the other half are going to be, it's brilliant. So I hope for the best, but like, if there's any show, that's what people forget. That show was already flawed and incomplete and not honed when it was on. So I don't know it'll be fixed now, but who knows?
Okay. I've got this. It's, Alan in the 660. This is one of my Alan nemeses.
Hello, Jason.
Hello, Alan. Alan says, Jason, I'm your anti-nemesis this week. I co-signed the recommendation of Travelers, and you were especially good in last week's letter segment. It was brave and refreshing to hear you defy the sneering conventional wisdom and defend The Big Bang Theory, a show much smarter than even the smart set acknowledges or knows. I haven't watched since September 2014. I didn't even know there was a baby. But up to that point, I had watched the entire series and thus have seen 160 of the 219 episodes that have aired to date. Kind of incredible to learn that number from Wikipedia, so I can hardly act superior because I bailed out the beginning of season 8 and you're still watching. I'm actually curious now to check back in. Despite Tim's protestations of not caring, does he ever stick up for shows other critics universally disdain? Can you think of something like that where everybody hated it and you're like, no, you are all wrong. It is I who am correct.
Alf? Sure. There's one.
Okay.
And do I need to go any further than that?
No.
That's the champ.
That's pretty great.
I can't remember quite off the top of my head. There's been a couple of shows that I have liked and I've been the outlier. Look, I actually thought, here's the thing. I won't go too deep in this because I could, because it's a pet peeve. I think sometimes if you give a qualified review of something, meaning like, I kind of like what they're trying to do here. It's not fully realized, but I like the ambition. If you give that kind of review, which I think really shows that could end up being great, maybe aren't there now, that's how most of them start. So a lot of those shows get knocked down right away by critics, and I think it's kind of a knee-jerk thing. And I would say that I was trying to be very positive about what Kurt Sutter was trying to do with Bastard Executioner. And I, in no way was I raving about that show, but I was like, you know what? This is completely different. And you know what? He needed to take this turn and let's see what he can do with it. I didn't mean that I liked the show, but everybody decided that they would just hate on it at the beginning. And there's been a couple of comedies where I've been like, oh, this is really funny. And people were like, no. So. Who knows?
Here's one from Brandon from the 301. He says, Netflix just released their Series of Unfortunate Events show. How is that? Is it any good? And more importantly, is Netflix ever going to stop spewing content out like some sort of weird content fountain? And if they don't stop, will they flood the world with so much content that the content sea levels will rise, causing a content catastrophe? Well, that's easy to say. Wow. I think, yes, that if they don't stop, the world will be just full of content and we will all die.
Wow. Points for you for being able to actually read that.
Content
that was good.
Catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
He also wrote about he's hoping to avoid the content apocalypse. So
content apocalypse for sure. It's one of my most eagerly sought after shows that I didn't review that I want to go watch. And part of me wants to wait and see if my teens want to watch with me. They probably don't. So onward I go, but I'll watch it. It got really good reviews. Yeah. Got excellent reviews, so I'm excited about
that. We watched episode one with my 12-year-old son, and everybody enjoyed it. And it was, you know, it's super stylized. Barry Sonnenfeld directed it. And so if you've seen the pilot of Pushing Daisies, if you've seen the live action version of The Tick that ran on Fox, you are going to get some idea of how like bright colored and stylized it is. And I don't always like that, but I liked it in this. I felt it was exactly appropriate for the tone of the books. And Patrick Warburton is the narrator, and that he's basically Lemony Snicket, and he's trying to do they use him to do what the voice of the narrator in the books does, which is kind of be present. He's present in scenes. He's not just a voice. He actually stands in the scenes and does things while he's narrating. And it gave me very warm, happy flashbacks to that live action Tick series, because at several points he just sounds exactly like he sounded on the Tick, and I think Patrick Warburton is hilarious. So that also was a plus. And yeah, I thought it was really good.
Well, you just did me a great favor. And I'm sure as you were saying those titles, people were like, there, circle back. Tim, go back. Pushing Daisies and The Tick both qualify as two of the weirdest shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, you're right. Wonder Falls is pretty weird, too.
And Wonder Falls, exactly.
Right? But yeah, you're right. Pushing Daisies, super weird show. Which I like the first season. I kind of gave up on it after a while because it was so stylized. But and The Tick, having seen three seasons of the animated version, I knew what I was sort of going to get. But that was a super weird show, and we'll see how weird the Amazon version is. But
I can't wait for the Amazon version because one of my favorite. I loved The Tick, and I love Patrick Warburton in it. And it, you know, that I love that one of the scenes where they were doing all the double entendres, and he wasn't getting it. And the guy was like,
I don't get it.
Are you picking this up? Like, nope.
Yeah, well, Peter Serafinowicz was really good, I thought, in the Amazon pilot. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that we answered Brandon. Good. We answered him. Sam Adams in the 707.
Oh, Sam Adams
says, Happy New Year, guys. Caught up on Atlanta. Is it okay that I liked it, but I'm still sort of confused as to what it was? Have you guys been keeping up with It's Always Sunny, Strong as Ever? The water slide episode was one of those delightful romps where everyone is at their worst. Is there a new show you're looking forward to the most, being a Marvel fan? I'm excited about Iron Fist and the Defenders, and Legion looks very interesting. Atlanta is a weird show. It's great, but we just watched last night the TV network episode, which is
the weirdest. Yeah.
Is the weirdest. Although the one where Justin Bieber is in it and is a black guy with no explanation is also super weird. There are lots of weird episodes of Atlanta. It's kind of one of the things I love about it is just when you think you've got its number, you totally don't have its number.
Yeah, and I think part of there's a better way for me to explain this, but not in detail. So I would just say part of what I love about Atlanta is part of what I love about a lot of super creative shows and individuals. It's like, okay, it's like when the first couple of seasons of watching Louis, I think my mouth was open most of the time. So I'm like, you can't do that, you know. And then when his wife came back, it's different. I mean, it's like you can't do that. You're breaking these conventions, and so. I like to watch someone, whether it's Aziz Ansari or Donald Glover, just try something different. And whether it's just in a shot and how you framed it, you know, it's like the wonder of watching Mr. Robot for the first time. It's like, oh yeah, man, this is great. You're doing something here that's never been done before. I want to see it. So that's part of why I loved it, but that's also part of the genius. It doesn't always have to make sense. It is kind of a thing, and it's a weird thing, but it's expertly pulled off. So that's what I did. The rest of the stuff, I don't know. You're fans of more of that stuff that's coming up that he's excited about.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's agreed on Atlanta. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is that it's so strange. In fact, we were watching something that said the great new comedy Atlanta, and my wife turned to me and said, "Comedy?" I said, "Well, it's funny." She says, "Yeah." But you know, like the word comedy doesn't seem to, like, that does not begin to describe what that show is. It is much more than
right.
Comedy.
It is much more. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. We got one here. This is from Alan in the 415. Another one of my nemeses.
Oh, hello, Alan. Jason.
Shows that affected people, especially, I think, will be remembered historically. He made a list that I thought was pretty good. He says The Smothers Brothers, Laugh-In, a lot of the, I think, probably 70s era, especially Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, Mary Tyler Moore, Roseanne, Roots, definitely. And he says, breaking my no cable guideline, the beginning of MTV. I think fair enough. Those are all kind of historical milestones of TV.
Yeah, so definitely. Those would qualify.
So no beefs here, Alan. Nemesis. No beefs. Solid.
Look at that. See what happens when we come together?
Yeah. He is right. Man. He says, I think it was easier for a TV show to influence the culture rather than just reflect it when there were fewer channels. And I think he's right about that. But definitely how we consume TV is totally different now.
Way to hug it out, guys.
Yeah, look at that. Bottle episode, our friend who binged like 80 episodes of this podcast in a very short time from the +44, I believe, has written back in with a time travel TV show question, which is, what would you do if you could use time travel that you're surprised that time travelers on TV shows don't do? He says, I for one would go into the future and download the next 100 years of Star Wars movies. I'm surprised that Ray Palmer on Legends of Tomorrow has not done this yet. I like that idea. I mean, honestly, there was a time when I was a kid when I thought, like, you go in the future and you get every comic book that's ever been published and every movie that's ever been made, and then you're set. And I think now it's like, you know, I can't even watch the TV that's on today. I don't know if I would get 100.
That's going to give me the hives.
The next 100
watching
Star
the
Wars
TV
movies
of tomorrow. Yeah. It's like when Apple announced there was a story about that Apple was thinking about getting into.
Apple Music. They're doing more original programming on Apple Music, the TV programming. Yeah, I saw your tweet. Movies. You're like, please no, don't.
It's
no.
Like,
yeah.
I like keeled over. Everything seized up.
Yeah,
part of me.
I don't know. I think the best things for time travelers to do are the things we see them do, which is, even Travelers has this as a premise too, which is, you remember, you know, who won sporting events and stuff and like Biff in Back to the Future. You use that to get your to make some money, and maybe I would bring back some technology. But again, I'm sure that's been a plot before too. Some awesome future technology that would make the world better today. But, you know, although, a digital trove of all, like, media from the next 50 years or something would be cool.
Yeah. But isn't one of the concepts or the precepts about time travels, you can't bring anything back that's, like, you can't bring, like, an iPhone back into the 40s or whatever. You can't go to the future and get an iPhone.
Depends on what TV show you're watching. But maybe, you know what I really would like is, I would like a parallel universe machine that lets me get, like, the second season of Freaks and Geeks.
Oh.
That's what I want. I don't want to go into the future. I want to go into parallel universes where, you know, I can get all five of the Beatles albums from the 70s and season two of Freaks and Geeks and the season four of Star Trek and things like that, right? That never were made. That's
yes.
what I would want.
That is very good. Parallel universe travel.
That's right. That's what I want.
So
I want
good.
I want John Lennon's solo albums from the 80s and 90s, right? That's the stuff
yeah.
I want.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Matthew wrote in on Twitter in the 602. And he said, when you guys were discussing wait and see TV, which we said last week is sort of like, this show seems interesting, but I'm going to wait to see if it gets renewed, wait to see if people like it after the whole first season is aired. He said, I heard wait and see, as in rhymes with latency. He says, run with that. Run with wait and see. Do wait and see viewings, streaming to catch up to a TV show currently airing in a later season, get noticed by networks making the big data connection? A catalog show that has really great Netflix numbers, the studio or the network will know about that, and mm-hmm. right, that's sometimes that's a strategy, isn't it? Like, well, this show's gonna really do well in catch up, and we hope that'll influence the ratings for the ones that we're showing.
Oh yeah, definitely. This calls came from the other one. We came one from Buffalo today. We also got one from obviously Wine Country, but then this one's from Phoenix. But not call.
The area codes. Yeah,
area code.
Yes, this is an Arizona tweet.
Yeah, there was a time. I don't remember it's happening now because they're protecting all their stuff. But yeah, you know, Netflix used to in the early days. Because I remember being told these stories from them, they would periodically just go to people and say, oh, you should not cancel that because it's like a huge hit for us. And that means that people are, you're not tracking people correctly. And it's, you know, I think that's why they picked up some of the shows that they picked up. But also, I think they make shows like, for example, let's save show X, and then we'll make a show like show X and what it'll be, you know, show Y, and we can build this crossover where everybody can be, it'll be that, you know, Shoppers also bought this, but in a much more sophisticated way of taste rather than product purchasing. But yeah, in the early days, they used to blow a lot of minds by saying, oh yeah, you know, we have your show on Netflix, and it's like, you know, we don't give our numbers out, but it's a huge hit. And then that would freak out the networks because they're like, how are we not tracking these people? You know, so who knows?
The downside is when you have a show that people are waiting to see, and if nobody watches it because they're all waiting to see, it's not going to come back.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go on to the next letter.
Okay, let's do that.
It's the bottle episode again from the +44. Just following up, we have at least one person. He's in the Birmingham area. He says they don't call car horns hooters.
Oh, that's, we were trying to figure that out.
What they do, they don't honk their hooters. They pop horns. I don't know, but just horns. # Hootergate. Thank you, bottle episode. All right. Finally, we're going to go to the land of the drop bear. Alice from Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, there's been nothing but bad news coming out of that country.
Is that right? Yeah. Yeah. It's dangerous. Anyway, Alice, you may remember, only runs when there's a new TVTM. That's her running podcast is this one. So Alice probably running right now, or maybe drinking some water and cooling back down. Anyway, Alice asks, what would you call a concurrent slow binge? I'm doing an episode or two per night of Sense8 and Atlanta right now and enjoying that pace. As the founder of the slow binge movement, I would just like to say,
yes, you are.
Alice, you are doing the slow binge. One of the great things about the slow binge is you program your own TV lineup and you say, instead of watching 3 episodes of one show every night, I'm going to watch an episode of show A and a couple episodes of show B and an episode of show C. So I'm not like just getting tired of the one show. I'm going to program those. And for a couple of weeks, those 2 or 3 shows are on your list. And as one of them falls off and you finish it, and you maybe slot another one in. That is the beauty of the slow binge, is instead of just saying 4 episodes of this thing, you're like, no, I'm going to mix in some other stuff and I'm going to go through them all. It's like reading 5 books at a time, which I don't do, but for TV, I think you can do it. So I approve, yeah. Alice. Mm-hmm. Watch out for drop bears.
And weird snakes who eat other snakes. It's just a scary country.
Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, but again, we love them. And when you're running, just avoid the trees. Avoid the eucalyptus trees is what I'm saying. All right, that's it. We've reached the end. How about that? Should I do the numbers?
Every podcast should end with a drop bear dropping. The sound of a drop bear.
Every well, they drop silently, and every podcast does end with a... That's what makes the podcast end, is the silent drop bear drops. Think about that next time you listen to a podcast.
So you're just editing out all the horrifying screams of people being chewed with those.
It ends with a drop. It ends with a drop. What happens next cannot be heard.
It's left to the imagination to horrify you.
Yeah, it's like all the best horror stories. So you can tweet at us at TVTM. I'm Jay Snell. He's Bastard Machine. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. You can email us, podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. Those are the ways to reach us. And you can find all of Tim's stuff at The Hollywood Reporter. And you can find all of our show notes at theincomparable.com/TVTM/115 for this episode. So that's it. We'll be back next week with much more because, Tim, the TV never, ever, 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 ever stops.
Never.
Never. Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Drop air. That's good.